Today, the cracks are showing in housing policy. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, now this post covering finance and property news. Today's show is going to delve into housing in some detail and link it back to the current summit that's going on about productivity. And I'm also going to incorporate some information from Edwin, which he prepared for a rant, but unfortunately he's not well enough to appear. But we're going to start with the opening day of the summit between the government and business, union and community leaders. On Tuesday, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese admitted how key the productivity challenge is to lifting living standards of Australians. That was echoed in Jim Chalmers' introductory remarks. The Treasurer said making the economy more productive over time was the best way to lift living standards and make people better off. And Chalmers even claimed that in one of the first cabinet meetings after the election, we decided to put productivity at the very core of a second term agenda. Funny how it wasn't actually there through the election campaign at all. After indicating in recent weeks that Labour's policy agenda for the next 3 years would not exceed the mandate won at the election in May, the Prime Minister said the summit would propose some ideas that can be immediately taken to Cabinet and others that will feed into the budget process. Removing planning restrictions is supposed to be a big idea coming out of this week's Economic Reform Roundtable, and on the second day of the Talk Fest, housing was front and centre, but actually little really emerged over and above trying to deliver that 1.2 million homes, the requirement to ease planning regulations and red tape, and evidently the continued belief in the build-to-rent rort, where big investors will essentially make housing a subscription service whilst getting great tax breaks along the way. In fact, there was an interesting case study in the reality of the property problem featured in the Financial Review. It was titled, "We Got Cracks. Rose Bay residents fear mascot towers repeat." The article brings to the fore the real issues below the surface, literally, and why the home building targets are unrealistic. The cornerstone of the problem is, well, overdevelopment. Rose Bay residents fear another uninhabitable residential build, like Sydney's mascot towers, the article read, and they fear it will be built on their soft, low-lying land at a time when cracks are appearing in homes next to developments and more than a dozen more projects are in the pipeline and awaiting approval. Locals have said that overdevelopment combined with the suburb's shallow water table could ultimately imperil new housing projects. Their homes are cracking already and it could be new developments that are next. Those concerns are serious and are based on hydrological analysis and should not be simply dismissed as NIMBYism, the residents said. But with the state government under pressure to increase density and meet housing targets, New South Wales Minister for Planning and Public Spaces Paul Scully has dismissed their claims as new and creative ways to say no to housing. In one dramatic example, residents on either side of a $4 million four-storey building in the affluent Harbourside suburb obtained a stop work order from the New South Wales Building Commissioner 2 years ago after they noticed cracks appearing in their unit walls. That was after digging for the development's one-storey basement car park had begun on Richmond Road. A renter in the building next door to the development, who wished to remain anonymous, said the damage to his home happened quickly over one weekend. "I walked into the kids' room and I was just like, oh my God, this is new. And then we spoke to the neighbours and said, we've got cracks. Before we knew it, everyone was saying they had got cracks." He described the ground being dug up as muddy sludge and said it would be a recurring issue for others living next door to developments. While the stop work order remains in place, the developer Positive Invest claimed it would be permitted to recommence works once the protective measures were implemented. The site is being prepared for construction commencement. All available avenues for assistance were provided in the neighbourhood. The Save Rose Bay Resident Action Group has reports of at least 10 other homes near new developments sustaining damage, such as cracks in walls, basements, garages, flooding, and plumbing dislodgement. One case that also sparked concern is a home on Wilberforce Avenue in Rose Bay, whose front walls collapsed after a single-storey basement car park began being built next door. The residents moved out, as it was deemed unsafe to live in. The property, which was sold for $6 million in 2023, has since been demolished and is being replaced by duplexes. The developer was contacted for comment by the AFR, but nothing reported. It's an uninsurable risk, and people have basically kept quiet because they don't want their property devalued, Save Rose Bay committee member Carmen McLaughlin said. We've got one spot, 14,000 square metres, all in one strip, in the settlement area that has been targeted for those developments. What about the buildings themselves? It'll be the next Mascot Towers. Now recall that Mascot Towers became uninhabitable after dangerous cracks appeared in the 10-storey building's basement car park in 2019. That sorry saga was only resolved last year under a government rescue plan that allowed the majority of owners to sell their properties and free themselves of debt related to apartments in the tower. The Rose Bay residents and some Woollahra councillors believe their low-lying suburbs' water table cannot cope with the amount of proposed developments that require deep excavation to build multi-storey underground car parks. Their fears are growing, with 13 apartment development applications currently in the planning process. It's going to be trying to plant Hong Kong in an area that can't accommodate it, McLaughlin said. Our big concern is not the fact that we're trying to increase housing, but there is an area of Rose Bay that is mapped out as a settlement area, and that area has complex hydrological aspects to it. It's considered vulnerable to a number of reports in that it's got a very shallow water table. It makes it very hard to do deep level excavation without having some repercussions. The Rose Bay residents are among a growing cohort of activists, including Mossman's residents, who made 90 submissions against one development, pushing back against state government housing policy that permits higher density developments within 800 metres of 171 town centres across the state. But in Rose Bay, the residents have said their concerns are substantial and shouldn't simply be dismissed as the NIMBY-style rejection of much-needed development. Planning Minister Paul Scully disagrees. He has put the onus back on the council to prove the developments are risky, arguing it has the responsibility to assess what constitutes a suitable and safe project. I've confidence that if sites have constraints, professionals such as engineers and designers, whose job it is to make sure developments are structurally sound, will get it right because they have been doing it for years, Scully said. Apart from those, of course, where it's gone terribly wrong. But seriously, this sounds like NIMBYism by another name from a council whose population has been falling over the past 30 years, while most other council areas have grown exponentially. I'm growing tired of this approach to housing, where some people think that the best thing they can do is to look for new and creative ways to say no to housing, instead of embracing new and creative ways for their suburb to help tackle a housing challenge. Woollahra councillor Meryl Witt said her concern is not over individual assessments of the development applications. She believes they need to be looked at as a group. I think my biggest fear is the impact they, the developments, will have on the water table and the impact that the excavation will have on neighbouring buildings, Witt said. At the moment, it seems like it's left up to the poor residents to sort it out in court, but it shouldn't be. A 2024 hydrological and geotechnical report commissioned by Woollahra Council to assess Rose Bay's suitability for increased development found the excavation and dewatering of land for multi-use underground car parks may have adverse impacts on the landform stability. The magnitude of those implications can be significant when the developments are considered from a cumulative perspective, it said. Woollahra councillors have put forward a motion to commission another study to specifically assess the impact of excavation for underground car parks in the Rose Bay and Double Bay rezoned areas, as well as a coastal vulnerability area map. The councillors are pushing for Craig Swick McNair, general manager of the council, to seek legal advice on whether the development approvals can be delayed and the potential liability if developments are prematurely approved. The time-sensitive concerns have ended in a blame game. The council is blaming the state government for not adequately assessing the risks of the development area. The Save Rose Bay group is blaming the council for not applying to the state for various development exclusions sooner. And the Minns government is blaming councils for not approving developments fast enough to meet the state's housing targets. And meanwhile, the potential for more development sites to emerge is increasing as residents band together to amalgamate their properties to sell to developers. A major example is a site in Rose Bay's Wilberforce Avenue and Dover Road, where 12 properties covering 5,978 square metres were put on the market for $165 million. The suburb's median home price is $5.2 million. The New South Wales government aims to deliver 112,000 new homes over a five-year period from the low to medium price policy, and 376,000 new homes overall to meet the federal government's national housing supply and affordability target by the 2028-29 financial year. Woollahra Council's housing target is to add 1,900 new homes by that time. Sydney Yimby Group Chairman Justin Simmon said podium marking structures, fewer parking spots, or eliminating parking from apartment buildings are solutions to the residents' concerns. Rose Bay has spent decades failing to build enough, and as a result, it has some of the most expensive housing on the planet. We've been putting homes in Sydney's west instead because fewer locals complain. But that's not fair and it's not strategic. The east is up to 10 degrees cooler than the west in summer. For the sake of climate resilience, we must rebalance where housing growth appears. So this just brings to the fore all of those issues below the surface, the various vested interests and the fact that really the chances of achieving that 1.2 million homes is pretty unlikely to be achieved. And I'm not sure that 3 days sitting around with about 25 to 30 other people is going to solve the problem. Now, I had hoped to go deeper into this today with property ranter Edwin Almeida, who went as far as to prepare some notes for his recording, but who unfortunately was too unwell to make that recording. But fair play to him. Let's go through his slides as we bring this show to a close. So Edwin started by highlighting this compare and contrast story. On one hand, should negative gearing be scrapped? And of course, there's a bit of a call for that from some, although not all. And on the other side, of course, as I highlighted on Monday, Ben Fordham revealed that with more than 1,500 people arriving in Australia every day, then we have a problem. We have a big problem, of course. Strong migration is feeding the demand for property. And if you think about those two factors, negative gearing is definitely enabling property investors to buy more, and migration is feeding the demand for more property for people coming in the country. It's going to put a candle under property prices ahead. Mind you, real estate agents are still copping flack. This particular article talks about one that actually was sentenced after pleading guilty to two counts of supplying prohibited drugs earlier in June. Nothing new there, possibly. And here's another one from Edwin that makes the point that the cost of stamp duty has risen faster than incomes over the past 2.5 decades, according to new analysis. That's, of course, because prices are higher. And that is putting a huge impost on people trying to move. And very interestingly, as Edwin highlighted, and I see it in my surveys too, one of the issues is that down traders, they're the people who want to move into smaller properties, perhaps to release equity, perhaps just simply to have a smaller property to live in, because they don't need the big one anymore, or kids have flown, etc., etc. Well, those down traders are potentially being hit with big stamp duty costs. And recent analysis that I've done has shown that the volume of down trader sales is at a 5-year low. That's because there isn't much in the way of supply of smaller properties in the right areas that people want. And the transaction costs, both agents' costs and also stamp duty costs, have gone through the roof. So there is stasis in this part of the market. And that means that a number of households in the down trading sector have decided to stay put. And of course, that's all part of the tapestry as to why the property market is substantially broken. Now, if we just look at the properties for sale, this is based on Domain, and comparing Monday the 11th of August in Sydney, where there were 20,118 properties for sale, the following week, 20,274, so a small rise. And as Edwin shows here, the listing counts are still higher than last year. Interestingly, we still have the same issue. A lot of properties listed, but very bad quality property. And that means transactions are not necessarily going through very strongly, and we have a lot of lemons still in the market. In Melbourne, on the 11th, there were 24,566 properties for sale. The following week, 24,928, so a small rise. And once again, we must highlight that in Melbourne, it's houses that are for sale or on the nose, and a lot of those are ex-investment properties that people are trying to get shot of. In Brisbane, there were 3,246 properties on the 11th for sale, and 3,200 properties for sale in Brisbane on the 18th. So they're less on the market at the moment as we come to the end of the winter season. In terms of auctions, well, the auction counts are still relatively down on where they were. And the point I continue to make is that the quoted clearance rates are meaningless because, of course, they don't necessarily report all the information that they need or should to give us a fair view. Edwin's charts have a much better view of what's going on. And you can see here that the auction numbers are down compared to 2024. The trend continues, a small lift, but still well down. And in terms of property price moves, you can see there that there have been slight upward moves for Sydney homes, Melbourne apartments, but Sydney apartments and Melbourne homes are actually lower. Finally, on the rental side, in Sydney on the 11th, 11,027 properties for rent. A week later, 10,798. And in Melbourne on the 11th, 11,575. And a rise to 11,655 the following week. So rentals are up in Melbourne, but down in Sydney, which may tell you something about the different dynamics in those two different cities. And first, as we come to the end of the show, we should wish Edwin well. Edwin, get well soon. We look forward to getting you back on the show when you're available and able to come back on. And we're also going to look at his tip for the week, because he also left one of those, which is a doozy. Edwin's tip was this: to make sure the selling agents have skin in the game. Here is the point. The average property price in Sydney is going through the roof. And if you take the average commission at, let's say, 1.5%, that's around $25,836 on average. So let's say 17 hours spent selling a property. Divide that into the $25,000 and you get about $1,519 an hour, plus marketing fees, plus auctioneer's fees, plus bonuses. So agents do really, really well out of this. And the question is, do they give you value for money? And can you make sure that they're acting in your own interests? Well, of course, that is the big question. And so Edwin reminds you to make sure that they have a stake in the game. But more broadly, the bottom line is this, that the property problem won't be solved in 3 days around a table in Canberra. The issues are deep-seated and structural, literally and metaphorical. And unfortunately, unless we tackle some of the underlying issues like migration and also think differently about the planning processes and, of course, think about the build-to-rent story, which is another rort in my view, things are going to get worse, not better. Chances are prices will continue to rise and the housing problem will grow ever bigger, despite all the government waffle. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.